There are shows with psychics.
And there are shows with doctors.
But there's no show like The Psychic and the Doc.
Your practical paranormal power unleashed.
This show synthesizes the talents of world-class medium Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, psychic explorer,
and street-smart spiritualist, behavioral psychologist, Dr. Pat Basile. All subjects are on the table, and no topic is taboo. Inspiration, insight,
action, and fun as Mark Anthony connects callers with loved ones in spirit.
In tandem with Dr. Pat's fresh, no-nonsense, street-smart, intuitive insights. And she is hilarious.
Extraordinary problems
require extraordinary solutions, which may come from this side
or the other side. This is The Psychic
and the Doc. And it starts now.
Yeah, I'm telling you, welcome everybody. Welcome to the show. We got a great show. We got a fabulous guest joining us here today. But I don't know if we could start the show without taking a moment, Mark.
Yes.
Right? You want to say a little bit?
I do. Ukraine is now in the third week of its heroic resistance against the Russian invasion. And, you know, military analysts expected Ukraine to crumble within days, but they have rallied behind President Zelensky. The resistance is nothing short of heroic and valiant. And Zelensky, I watched his speech to the British House of Commons the other day. It brought tears to my eye. He was Shakespearean, and he paraphrased Winston Churchill's, "We will fight them." He said, "We will fight them in the forests. We will fight them on the beaches. We will fight them in the streets." And to see every member of parliament on their feet, clapping and cheering. And I've spent a lot of time in Britain. I spent a great deal of time in Winston Churchill's war room, which they just opened up about 25 years ago now.
Yeah.
And to see where he was conducting operations during the Battle of Britain, when everybody thought all hope was lost, and they rallied behind that leader. And it is just amazing. And our hearts, our minds go out to the Ukrainian people. Interesting. I've had a couple people say that, you know, yes, we're praying for the Ukrainians, but we should be praying for Putin because he has no love in his life. Mm-hmm. And I want to get you guys' take on that in a moment, because you're both in the psychological field. But there may be hope. I found a breaking story just about an hour ago on Russian state television, which is essentially a propaganda arm of the government. Russian state television goes off message by denouncing the Ukraine war. And a journalist, she said, her name is Karen Shakhanazarov, a filmmaker and state pundit, said that this conflict in Ukraine risked isolating Russia and is even worse than Afghanistan. And she said, "I have a hard time imagining taking cities such as Kyiv. I can't imagine how that would look." And then the host of the show immediately cut her off. But to see Russian state television calling upon Mr. Putin. Now, Russia, and I've spent a fair amount of time in Russia. The Russian people are amazing. They're brilliant. They're scientific, artistic, literary, their cultural achievements. I've actually been asked backstage and met members of the Bolshoi Ballet. Bombing a maternity hospital and bombing schools is beneath the Russian people. And I don't hold them at fault. I hold one person at fault for allowing that to happen. And Dr. Pat, I want to ask you, as a psychologist, would you say that Mr. Putin is a person filled with love, or do we feel that there are some issues that he is seeking some warped sense of validation?
You know, we could spend a whole show on, and I think I think our guest, William Peters, probably would join in on this with me for a minute, because we can spend a whole show, and there are many people in my field, and I think, William, maybe you might agree with this. When you're looking at people that some people in my profession classify as nothing short of NPDs. Now, we're not talking about NDE, right? Or S, we're talking NPD, yeah. Right? Has nothing to do with death, kind of, because it's a sort of death of the soul. And we're talking about narcissistic personality disorder. Not like throwing the words narcissist around. That is not what we're saying here. That is like an overused term that caught on in our pop culture by a whole bunch of people that really don't understand the impact of it. But when you're talking about somebody that has this sociopathic, psychopathic edge, let me call it, because I must have the caveat before Facebook pulls us, I'm not treating him. I just have to say that. None of us here.
Right.
There's not much you can do, to be honest with you, yeah. When you're working with people that have to be fueled by ego. And now we don't have number 45 to fuel his ego. Now, and there's nobody in his way. I mean, this is the highest pathway for a world leader, if you were to consider that. Putting that aside, I just don't get how in our day and age, psychology or no psychology, I just don't get in how our day and age, any country is allowed to do that. That's really the shock for me.
It is. And yeah.
And our hearts have to go out to what's going on out there.
I mean,
our hearts have to go out to.
It is. And I've been to war zones in Southeast Asia. And when I was in Peru, and William spent a lot of time in Peru as well. When I was in Peru, a third of the country was under the control of a communist insurgency, the Shining Path. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in Southeast Asia, I was at a refugee village of Laotian refugees, which was on the Thai border. So, you know, I've seen this, but I've seen some of the fallout of war. But to see the children and the women and the elderly people. I mean, 3 weeks ago, these people, they were like us. They're going to the movies. They were going to cafes. They were just having a life. And then this happened. And I saw this one woman being interviewed on the street, and she said, never take peace for granted.
Oh.
And, you know, I've done readings for people who lived through the London air blitz. So they were elderly. And once again, we could do a whole show on that. So, yes, our hearts definitely go out to the people of Ukraine in this heroic struggle. Yeah. And, you know, I can't help but to think it's David against Goliath. And every military analyst is saying, what's Putin going to win? A devastated country that's filled with a hostile population, and Russian boys are already going home in body bags. Yeah. They said, so if we're going to pray for something, pray that he figures a way out of this that doesn't involve weapons of mass destruction. So I want to change the tone a little bit here and introduce my friend and colleague, William Peters. He is a renowned psychotherapist at the Family Therapy Institute of Santa Barbara. He focuses on end-of-life counseling. He has also extensive experience as a hospice worker with the Zen Hospice Project in San Francisco. But there's more to William than meets the eye, because he's had not one but two NDEs, near-death experiences. Mm. And one of the amazing things about this show is we've had several people, myself included, who are NDEers, near-death experiencers, on. And it's really fascinating, the take and the insights that this gives to people. And William has collaborated and worked with the great Dr. Raymond Moody. In fact, William has been the founder or is the founder of the Shared Crossing Project. And he has a new book out entitled At Heaven's Door.
Yeah.
So welcome to the Psychic and the Doc, William Peters.
Yeah, welcome. Hey,
great to be here, Mark. Thanks for the introduction and good to see you, Dr. Pat. I'm looking forward to our conversation. And I want to echo what you both did by way of beginning our time together, because it is a tragedy what the Ukrainians are living through. And I dare say, Mark, I really appreciate you saying the piece about the Russians, too, because, you know, the Russian people, when they get the information, are as horrified as the rest of the world.
And I think, they are, you know, because, when I was in Russia, it was the waning days of the Cold War. And I remember like talking to Russian soldiers who were my age. I was 19, you know, and they're looking at me and we're looking at each other. And it's like, we're both thinking the same thing. I don't want to kill you. You know, you're not my enemy, you know, and the Russian people, they are just amazing. I remember, we went to this lecture and this young lady, she was reading the distressing barrage of decibels from the West. She was talking about rock and roll music. And so when it was over, I said, hey, that thing you're saying about rock and roll. And she said, these words are not the mine. She goes, I like jazz. And then she said, I am proud to be Russian, not so much proud of my government. You know, so yeah. So the Russian people, they certainly are no strangers to autocratic regimes. And thank you, William, for saying that. So, yeah. You know, our hearts go out to all those Russian families whose sons are coming home in body bags. And none of this needs to be happening.
No. You know, I want to comment on one last thing about this, because, Mark, you and I have talked about Kamala, Vice President Kamala Harris before.
Yeah.
When she took the podium, I think it was today, not too very long ago, from Poland.
Yeah.
You bet that the government and Putin are praying that Joe Biden hangs in there. Because if you listen to her language and how she speaks, and the firmness and the language of consequences, that's who that woman is, right?
Yes.
And yet we walk this tender ground. And we walk this tender ground every time we say the word death. I mean, we are talking about that today.
Yes.
You know, we may be talking about Russia and Putin, and we may be talking, but we are talking about people that are transitioning, right? People, their loved ones are watching them. And that's really the basis for opening up the conversation, right?
Yes.
It's let's talk about whatever you think is next. Let's have William, you know, chime in on not just his life experiences, but now, William, also the passion and the purpose you have for getting this message out, right?
Thank you. Yeah, I am definitely passionate about letting people know that this experience of death and dying is not how it's portrayed in our dominant culture and even in our medical system. So, and you all know that, but I've been fortunate to have a research project now that has documented that these experiences happen at the end of life, where somebody dies and a caregiver, loved one, reports sharing in this journey from this life into a benevolent afterlife. And it's absolutely spectacular, just like the near-death experience in terms of phenomena, but the experiencers, the caregivers, loved ones, don't have a brush with death. Mm-hmm. They are just like you and I. They are sound in mind and body, and they are watching their loved ones, oftentimes accompanying them into this beautiful afterlife.
Wow. I think that, you know, Mark, one of the things we do want to talk with you about is, and thank you for joining us on the show today, right?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things that I think we all get struck by is, you know, when we hear heaven's door, let's just say that a minute, could we? you know, heaven's door, right? Who doesn't have an image of that? You know, maybe you think it's like oak with like gold and brass handles. Or if you're me, you think it's gold with that, with, yeah, right? So, but just by saying it, it just has people rise up.
Yeah.
Isn't it fascinating that if you said heaven's door as opposed to death and dying, it's like a different energy in our world.
Very different, and very different. And, you know, and I get this this question asked a lot, like, why do you use the word heaven? I mean, isn't that kind of laden with, you know, certain religious overtones? And I said, you know, I do think it has, you know, a Judeo-Christian overtone to it. And yet everybody around the world, every great wisdom tradition has a notion for a benevolent afterlife, yeah. Call it heaven, call it, you know, a particular bardo, whatever it is, this notion exists. And I apologize to those for using heaven if they think it's a little culturally narrative, narrow, but it does work because it does describe the experience that is the culture that I grew up in. And I wanted to start there.
Well, yeah, you know, I love that you did too, because heaven, haven, right? I mean, no matter potato, patata, what we're talking about is some view that different cultures have of another place,
yeah.
Another space, another energy, another, you fill in the blank, right?
Yeah.
Mark, sorry.
Well, no, it's, you know, we have to realize too that heaven is a word to describe the transition into infinity. And, you know, I hear people, there was controversy, I think it was about 2 or 3 years ago, about some professor getting fired because he said that Allah is the same as the Judeo-Christian God. And people are like, no, he's not, no, he's not. Well, Allah is simply the Arabic word for God.
Yeah.
Okay. In Hindi, it's Rama. You know, so we get all these words and, you know, heaven, and like William said, it's a benevolent afterlife. Some people call it paradise. The Chinese call it the Happy Valley. The Greco-Romans call it the Elysium Fields. But we're all talking about the same thing. It's sort of this, you know, Club Med that you don't have to pay for, you know, as opposed to hanging out in a garbage dump,
yeah.
Which is, you know, planet Earth oftentimes.
Yeah. You know, my stepmama was from the Deep South. She'd say, girls, someday we all gonna be going home. Yeah. Now, we didn't think she was talking about taking a trip down the South. But she would say, yeah, we're all gonna be going home. That's where we started. That's where we'll be going. That was her version of it. And I always found that interesting. I must say it took me a couple of decades to realize what she was saying, but that's what she meant.
You know, I was having lunch with my mentor, Father Sonny, and I've quoted him in a couple of my books, and he was hilarious. We were joking about heaven, you know, like he said, well, there's Jewish heaven, there's Catholic heaven, there's Protestant heaven. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, Catholic heaven, you know, there's bingo and gambling and drinking, you know. He goes, Protestant heaven, they don't get to do anything, but they're happy. And he goes, Jewish heaven, he goes, hey, you know, your credit card's got an unending limit. I mean, he was joking, but he was making the point that everything is about love, mm-hmm. and that we all create these points of reference to describe what we in a finite state is essentially indescribable. Now, I'm going to, William, if you would, could you explain for our audience, and, you know, we have a smart audience, okay? We have a worldwide audience. We got a really great audience, but there may be some people who are not familiar with what a near-death experience is. So let's start there. What's a near-death experience, AKA NDE?
Yeah. So a near-death experience occurs when somebody has a brush with death.
Yeah.
And they are reported, you know, in hospitals where people are having medical procedures. There's a good deal of research by Pim von Lommel in Europe who talks about people having these cardiac surgical procedures, and about 18% of them will report having these near-death experiences. And the experience usually is something like you leave your body. You can actually, in some of these, everyone's unique, but the dominant features are you see yourself your physical body down below. You often go to the light. You can have a life review. You can see deceased relatives. There's a whole option of really wonderful features to be experienced. So, but I should be clear, near-death experiences can also happen. They can be stress-induced. We know that there are people that have these experiences with no physical apparent brush with death. It's more psychological. And these are coming out more and more, these trauma-induced near-death experiences. There was some disagreement about whether they should be let into the club of NDEs, but
I mean, no, that is really true, because I'm so glad you brought that up. We did an interview a couple of weeks ago, I believe it was, where the person we were speaking with at the time had an experience very similar to mine, but yet it may not get you in the club. The fact that you pass out, you don't remember anything, and you find yourself on the way to it in an ambulance hooked up to things may or may not qualify, but you're so very different the next day. You know what I love about this is that we're kind of becoming like a little bit more open-minded, I think, maybe.
I think Mark has been with the the near-death experience community, IANS, for a long time. He's a real kind of pillar of that community. And I think, Mark, I think you'd agree with me. There's been a loosening, a more inclusive movement over the last few decades allow these experiences in. And I'll be really clear here. The research by the leading researchers in this have really phenomenologically corroborated that these are having the same experiences. I'll say for myself, I had a high-speed skiing accident. I crushed my spine. They had, they saw that I had severely fractured my spine. But when I talked about my near-death experience, even a couple of decades ago, I have this in 1979, there were people that said, well, you might have just, had trauma and gotten dizzy and, and I think, no, I've read the research. I know where I stand. But this is different. I think
my spiritual experience is more spiritual than yours. Well, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because we also have to realize and is that this whole field of study, near-death experiences, as we all know, have been documented for thousands of years, but it's only been in the last 50 years that the scientific method has been applied to it. And William, you're part of expanding this understanding, because what you're talking about, like with your skiing accident, see, I think the traditional at that time NDE was you had to flatline, you had to like die, be resuscitated, go to Happy Valley, Elysium Fields, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. But now we're seeing situations like yours and Evan Alexander, we had him on the show where he wasn't physically dead, but he had an NDE. And then there's it wasn't really of an NDE. It was an OBE, an out of body experience. And it's like, but we're seeing the same phenomena. So I didn't mean to cut you off, but okay. So tell us about that NDE. And I'm curious to hear about both your NDEs.
Well, yeah. So my second NDE happened when I was in the ICU. I actually come in through the emergency room because I had what they call petechiae, dots all over my body that looked like pinpricks of redness, which I later found out was that my platelets were crashing and I was starting to drown in my blood. I woke up on the ceiling of the intensive care unit at Kaiser Hospital, Oakland, and I was listening to the nurses talking about the patients in the ICU. And they got over, they talked about this one guy who was, 30 years old, really healthy, no real past history. And I go, that's interesting. I kind of move my consciousness over, take a look at that. And I go, oh my gosh, that's me, but I was up there floating around for, I think, 2 to 4 hours in the middle of the night. And what's so interesting about that experience is that I was, until I connected myself to my physical body in that ICU bed, I was a free range, roving about consciousness with all these observing functions, but I didn't have an identity. It wasn't until the nurses you know, connected me up to, you know, bed number three and William Peters that I realized, oh my God, that's me. So this really taught me unequivocally that whatever I am, whatever I identify as me, myself, or I, it is not dependent on that physical body, because there I was completely, you know, being me without a name. And I was happy. I mean, I was just pleasant. I was just enjoying the phenomena without any sense of, like I said, a name or a label for who I was. So that's my second NDE. And then, you know, I should also say that in my work, when I was a social worker in San Francisco during the AIDS epidemic, this is the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
I had people, clients coming in. I was a direct service social worker when this epidemic exploded, and gay men primarily just impoverished. And now with the scourge, we didn't know if it was even, if AIDS was even communicable. We didn't know how it was communicable. So they would come into my office and they were bearing their own brothers, as they called them, you know, nightly. Multiple, it was just a real horrible situation. But I heard about these shared death experiences, and in one in particular from Brad, who I was quite close to as a client, because he was a very sophisticated man. He helped these communities deal with death and dying. He was basically a psychopomp, and that's a skilled man. And he came into me one day and described this experience where he said, oh yeah, we were gathered all around Randy last night, and at the moment of his death, he rose above us in a beautiful cylinder of light and looked around at all of us and said, thank you. And he was healthy and radiant and happy. And we felt that love. We felt that appreciation. We felt that redemption in his life. And as Brad was sharing this story, I was going, oh yeah, this makes sense. I've had these. I know what this is. As it turns out, that became a way that others would come share with me. So here I was, just somebody who was not the least bit judgmental because I'd had them and I had no reason to doubt these. Yeah. So anyway, those are my early experiences, and I can go on further. But
well, I want to take a short break, because when we come back, I want to talk to you with you about what you just mentioned, shared death experiences, and your book. You know, I was reading through your book, and I felt like you were talking to the countless number of people that have not really had a language or the voice to experience this, right? I mean, in the field of psychology, back in the day, that's not too long ago, I will say this, when somebody started to talk like this, like they knew or they could feel their partner or their mom. I mean, when people started to talk like that, you know, you wanted right away, get them to a psychiatrist, get them on prescription drugs, get them on. But you have something to share about that, that doesn't require people to be on prescription drugs, but requires us to acknowledge that experience, right?
Yeah.
Let's take a short break. But before we do, how do people get a copy of your book? And we're going to talk more about that when we come back.
Thanks so much, Dr. Pat. Yeah, I'm fortunate. My publisher is Simon & Schuster. You can get this book wherever books are sold.
Yeah. When we come back, we're going to be talking about why are you here? What does it mean to be at the doorstep of inquiry? What does it mean to open up a book like this and really ponder the question of how you may have been experienced what William's talking about at heaven's door? Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
Want to ignite your best life full of joy, passion, and purpose? Then join me, Stephanie James, for The Spark, Wednesday nights, 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock Eastern, on TransformationTalkRadio.com, and learn how together we can illuminate the world. Learn more on StephanieJames.world. The best is yet to come.
Hi, everyone. This is Courtney Cottrell, host of Unapologetically Favorite on Transformation Talk Radio, here to give you some tips on how you can move your life forward if you're feeling stuck by using the GROW model. First, use the letter G to write down the goal that you ultimately want to achieve, whether it's working out 1 hour a day or working towards a promotion at work. Second, using the letter R, think realistically about the roadblock that is currently holding you back from accomplishing your goals. Third, use the letter O. Think about the options or opportunities that will help you in achieving your goal. What can you change in your daily routine that will help you move closer to achieving your goal? Fourth, use the letter W to discover your will and make a true commitment to achieving your goal by writing down a completion date. Once you've reached your goal, celebrate your accomplishment. You are capable of achieving anything you set your mind to. Never give up and keep being unapologetically you.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. And we're really excited to have all of you meet, if you haven't met him already, William Peters. And by the way, we are talking about this phenomenal book, At Heaven's Door. And that's what my mama, I think, mentioned. I know she meant like, oh, girls, we're going to be going home. But I want to make sure people know this book is available everywhere. So let's just make sure everybody knows that. They can just Google that. It's very easy to find. But before the break, you know, I was really struck by what you had said, and many people may not have picked up on it when you talked about SD is shared, right? And I want to really talk about that because the book is one of the first that I've read where it allows for the space of the people that are part of the passing to be witnessed. And so often they're not. People don't believe the experience they're having, right? And yet it's so special the way you describe it in the book. My gosh, what have you found are the results when people feel heard and saw or seen from having this shared death experience?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Pat. I mean, I find the phenomena to be spectacular, as we know, but I would not be doing the work that I'm doing but for the phenomenal therapeutic and healing benefits when the experiencers can be affirmed in their experience. And what we see is, if you know, when they come into my office, and this is what I specialize in, so I have people call me now from all over, and they'll just want to know, hey, I want to know if I had one of these, can you help me? And I'll talk to them, and invariably they start out very hesitant, like, you know, they don't want to be presumptuous that they've had this experience, or they're even doubting themselves. And as they start talking, and I say to them, well, you know, the experience you're having is very much a shared death experience. And I say, I want to ask you, what does this mean to you? Like, what does this mean for how you see yourself, how you see life? You can talk about how you see death, but it's really about how you see life. And what I hear over and over again is, and this is in the research now, the vast majority report that they know that their departed loved one is alive and well in a beautiful, glorious afterlife. They know that they'll see this person again, and their fear or anxiety about death and dying is largely alleviated. Yeah. And they also come back with this sense that they have a greater understanding for the purpose of life in general. Like, they get an understanding that this human life we're all having here fits inside a larger existence, if you will. And they also feel that because of this experience, they have an insight into what they're supposed to be doing with this life. Mm-hmm. And that's spectacular. All this points to a much more meaningful grief and bereavement process. We call this, as you know, a reconciliation of grief is far more imbued with meaning and purpose and understanding. Not that you don't miss your loved one. We always miss our loved ones. But with the shared death experience, you understand that it fits inside a larger plan, that there's a kind design behind all of this, and death is a natural part of life. And that, like I said earlier, you're going to be reunited at some point anyway. And so you might as well just accept the terms of this and make the best of your life while you're here.
Yeah. You know, we talked at the beginning of the show before we went on air. And if any of the listeners would like to call in and share your shared death experience, the number is 1-800-930-2819. So we are taking calls for you to share your NDE or your shared death experience. 1-800-930-2819. You know, William, that's a really important point about people understanding that their loved one has transitioned to this higher frequency, because I think that's the number one fear in death and dying, is that someone that meant so much to you has just ceased, has just become nothing, disintegrated, the void. And I think that, well, I don't think, I know, certainly as a medium, because I facilitate communication with people, with their loved ones here. But for people who are not mediums, for people who've never had these experiences or any of the education or the background that we do with this, and then they have front row seats to a visit to the other side. I can't think of anything which would be more enlightening, more empowering. You know, my grandmother, she was 95 when she died, and my Uncle Joey was taking care of her. And before she died, she was in a non-responsive state, and she opened her eyes, she kissed him, and she had him bent over, she kissed him on the cheek, and she said, "I'm going home now." Mm. And then she let go. Mm. You know, and so she was having that deathbed vision, which is the start of the SDE. So I think that bringing this awareness is incredibly healing and empowering.
Yeah. I want to ask you a question around this as well, Mark, a piggyback off that, William, for you, because I have battled for a decade. I don't do it much anymore, but I have battled in my profession, for the case of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who wrote The Five Stages, was never meant. So this was my argument, was never meant for the living. And, you know, people would ask me, why are you arguing that? I said, because if you apply, and she said it, when your death is imminent, these are what you go through. Like if you're dying, this is for dying people. But the profession wants to pick these up and apply them for people that are living. And I think when you do that, we diminish the shared death experience, because it is explained away by the model that she presented, which was never meant for living people.
That's a really good point.
She spent a lot of time studying near death, and I mean, the scandals around her. Of course, she was acknowledged in the end, but I've often thought, does her model, can it be superimposed on the living?
Yeah.
And I think maybe, but what does it cut out in the thousands of years that there were ceremonials around death by the living? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, people just didn't die back in the day. They had like celebrations. They had like river things they did. I mean, this was like a thing.
Well, Dr. Pat, you know, you have Italian heritage. I have Italian heritage, and I see her like in my grandmother and then great grandmother's day, when a man died, his widow would wear black for a year. You know, I mean, obviously they've gotten over that in Italy with the, you know, Gucci, Versace, and it's like, I'll wear black for a day, and then we're going to, you know, but the thing is, that was also very empowering for those people, because, you know, grief isn't something we get over. Now, you know, the three of us have a different take on grief and a different take on dying. And I'm not suggesting for one nanosecond that we're immune to the pain of losing a loved one. You know, we can talk about, and I've perceived the other side on, you know, almost a daily basis. William certainly has, Dr. Pat has. And yes, it's wonderful, but it still hurts when people that we love die. And the understanding of the afterlife through an SDE, through a shared death experience, and through spirit contact in the various forms is part of an integral approach to coping with loss. But people still need to go through the actual grieving process. They need to cry, they need to feel, and you know, denial is not just a river in Africa anymore. Okay, avoiding your grief doesn't make it go away. So I just want to make sure that, you know, that the listeners understand that we're not downplaying this, but what William's explaining is and confirming is that understanding that physical death is not the end of existence, I think that's an amazingly healing step in coping with loss.
Yeah.
That's it. Mark, you just nailed it. It's if the shared death experience teaches us anything, is that life is the substrate of existence. There is no way that you can not be. We are all here somewhere. and that's just the way it is. And I think what's so beautiful in the research, now we have, you know, 250 some odd deeply analyzed shared death experiences. Almost every one of them says, I wish I had known about this before I had it, because I had to struggle so much to validate it, to make it legitimate. And this is, you know, Dr. Pat, you so wisely outed us as mental health professionals, how we just don't have space for this reality. It's not so much that we knee jerk, you know, 5150 people or, you know, send them to the psych ward. That can happen in some places. But what we don't do is we don't say, hey, you just had a gift and I want to help you process this, integrate it, you know, really get the therapeutic benefits of it, because this experience will transform you and everyone in your family. Share this story. And what we find, sadly, is when we're interviewing people and I'm talking to them clinically, I'm often the first or second person. And if there's been more than two, they've been rejected and shamed by one of them or doubted, you know, like, you know. So we need to get the word out. I mean, that's the mission of the Shared Crossing Project.
No, that's what I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I was really touched by part of the book where I think you were talking to Maria or Marie. I believe that was her name. And you had tried to express condolences. I'm sorry for your loss. And she actually didn't answer you. And then finally, I think after, what did you do? Rephrase it like four times or something. Finally, she just said, everyone here has lost someone, as if that is just the way it is.
Yeah.
That is just the way it is.
We do have a caller. We have Derek on the line who wants to ask William a question. Jacob, can you patch him through?
Absolutely. Here's Derek.
Hey, Derek, I'm Mark Anthony. You're with Dr. Pat. And I understand you have a question for our guest, William Peters.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Great to be on the air. And
Welcome.
It's Social Work Month, and happy Social Work Month to you. I'm a social worker myself, so really enjoying your story. One of the things, Mark, in the end of your book, in the afterlife frequency, you talked about seeing your father's spirit.
Right.
And William, you mentioned the same story there earlier, and I didn't catch the name of who you were describing, but talking about the cylinder of light. Is that a fairly common phenomenon then that we just haven't heard about? Because I hadn't heard about that until I read Mark's book there.
Yeah, that is a great question, Derek. I mean, what we call that in our research is seeing spirit leave body. And that's just kind of the way we code it, if you will. We see that in about 10% of our cases. But what's so profound about it is when the experiencer, the caregiver, loved one is observing this, what they say is that, oh my, I watched my loved one leave their body, usually very gradually float up, and there's still communication going on. They say that loved one in the form of spirit will turn in a certain way, stop while in the room, and there'll be this affective soul-to-soul communication. And I think Mark's work on the afterlife frequency that you presented, Mark, about this, you know, energetic soul frequency is where I really got, when I read that, I said, oh my gosh, you're totally on it. Yeah, there is a communication that happens and it's energetic.
Electromagnetic soul.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, and the electromagnetic soul explains all the forms of spirit communication, and it explains the mechanics of why a shared death experience occurs. And so when people are in close proximity to somebody who is actively dying and the people in close proximity are not actively dying, there's an overlap of brainwave frequencies between the EMS, the electromagnetic soul, the transitioning person, and the bystander. So it's like an overlap between two different radio stations. You all of a sudden get caught up in 107.9's talk show when you were on 87.5, but you get this overlap, and then you become part of it for however long, for a few moments. And throughout history, people have reported shared death experiences. I mean, you know, there's biblical accounts of people seeing angelic beings and spirits of light. All these cultures throughout thousands of years have been reporting these. You know, there's even thought that A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens is an account of a near-death experience, and that it's the life review, at least the first two ghosts. You know, Christmas Past, when, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge was almost a nice young man, and then when he became a real stinker, was the Ghost of Christmas Present, and then he sees what could come. So the funny thing is, and Charles Dickens, we know, almost died on several occasions. Was that also a DNDE? But that's another story. But the thing is, what William has brought to light, William has applied the scientific method to these phenomena, which have been reported not only through physicians, but also in literature, things like A Christmas Carol. So Derek, I really want to thank you for calling
you,
in and sharing that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep, thanks very much.
I mean, yeah, thank you so much. Thanks for listening, Derek. I mean, I think, you know, I think Derek's question begs for a broader question. And the question is this, you know, have we actually recorded, I suspect not, the various ways that this form of transitional communication might happen? And I ask that question because I think it's a wonderful discovery. I think it helps people when they either hear something or see. Look, I got thrown out of Catholic boarding school at age 6.
I knew I liked you, Dr. Pat.
I was there over a weekend. They didn't come get me again. And I'm looking at the ninth station of the cross, and I'm a little kid, shouldn't even be in there. And I pull on Sister Michael Anthony, and I said, hey, I just saw my mother's up there with Jesus. Jesus just told me, my mom, she's okay, she's with me. Okay, grabs the hair, grabs the ears, drags me to Mother Superior, and you walk in, and Mother Superior's got her head down, and Sister Michael Anthony is screaming that I'm lying again. And lo and behold, what was the note that Mother Superior had? And what I love about that story, which was, to this day, I've never changed it, was how many ways might there be? This is not my field of study, but I wonder how many ways might there be that our loved ones or others are transitioning and leaving messages for so many people, and they don't know what to do with it. Now, clearly, I had a stepmom from the South. and she was with my dad, and there's no way that she was going to make me retract this, because that's what I was supposed to do. Like somebody slipped me a note in the middle of church. No, that didn't happen. But I wonder, William, from your perspective and Mark, how many ways might there be that we haven't even touched upon yet?
Well, this is a great question because, you know, my organization studies not just the shared death experience, because we really started with that. And yeah. Then all of a sudden we got all these people calling us about these other experiences they're having. So I actually created this spectrum of end of life experiences that has, you know, end of life dreams and visions we know pretty well. Yeah. But there's a whole host of other forms of after death communication that happen anytime after a death. And, but yeah. But I have charted them out so you can see certain types of communication yeah. that happen in proximity to an actual death. But you're right. The communication is there in a myriad of forms. And I think most of us, not because we're not smart or not because we're not even aware, it's because we aren't allowing the growing science, let yeah. alone the deep spiritual traditions, tell us that these experiences happen. They're not just for saints and super spiritual people. They happen to every people, people like you and I. I mean, we're pretty special, but you know, they can happen to anybody. You know?
Not when I was six. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, you know, I went to Catholic school as well, and I'll never forget there was this, it was during religion class, and this nun was teaching it, and she was just this really angry, frustrated woman. And she said, "You have to love others as you love yourself." And this one girl raised her hand and said, "What if you hate yourself?" And the nun smacked her in the face and goes, "Jesus loves you." 30 years later, she's in my office as a client for DUI, driving under the influence. And I can only wonder, how many times did she explain what happened to her to a psychologist?
Yeah.
You know, and I know that's kind of departing a bit, but it isn't mm-hmm. because what Dr. Pat, you're saying is absolutely correct, is that traditional religions and what William, you've seen, oh, you can't believe that. You can only believe, in other words, there's only access to the divine through mm-hmm. our clerics, our scripture. Oh, and by the way, give us 10% of your income. And that's the only way that you can do it. And I recall when I was in Japan, I had a discussion with a Buddhist monk. And the Japanese, you can be a member of more than one religion in Japan. Pretty much everybody there is Buddhist, some form of Christian, and Shinto. And, you know, they like it all. And I asked him about that. And what he said to me is, as many people as there are in the world is as many paths to God as there are in the world.
Yeah.
You know, and then yeah. I come back to Florida here. Well, there's only one way. And it's like, I kind of defer to that monk.
Yeah.
And William, that's what you're talking about, too. And what Dr. Pat's question was, there's a whole myriad.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in your book, you have Liz and Nicholas. There's a story in your book that I had to read a couple times. Like, did he really say that Liz continued to feel Nicholas for presence for years? Yeah. We don't even have that concession because we don't think it's related to the death, right? We have a story that says it's related to some after-death visit. But what if the process began during the transition?
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know, Pat, you're also, as you're talking, it's making me think of this really, it's a therapeutic model I use for grief and bereavement. It's yeah. called continuing bonds. It's this notion that we, as therapists, have this responsibility to engage the bereaved in crafting a new relationship with new communication that is their of their, it's for them to interpret the signs and signals and go to people like Mark to get kind of a direct phone call, if you will, to the other mm-hmm. side and fit that all into their continuing meaningful relationship yeah. with their departed loved one. And this is a stark contrast to what we were taught, which is the yeah. old Freudian let go and move on. Yeah. And that who can do that with our loved ones? No mother who loses a child or even yeah. a parent, you know, anybody who loses a significant wants to do that. They want to hold on to that love and integrate it into their life.
You're going to have to come back because, you know, I would love to have a conversation with you about what have we learned from COVID? What have we learned from those passages? Yeah. And how closely does it relate to the AIDS epidemic? Because I was in New York and I volunteered, and the energy and support around these people that were transitioning, you could feel the collective. I mean, first of all, they were all thrown into a wing at a hospital and isolated. How much is that like COVID? And there was a collective energy. The difference was we were allowed to be there with COVID not. I hope you come back and talk a bit about what you've learned about this process for people that I do believe are not being witnessed now after COVID.
I would love to come back. You're absolutely right. The COVID experience has radically influenced how we do grief and bereavement and how we sit with our loved ones or don't.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of trauma that people are dealing with now. It's the biggest thing I have seen is the guilt, the confusion, the lack of ritual around the loss of a loved one that now is being stampeded by this goal to get back to normalcy.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got
crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Hello. If you want to just misquote Elizabeth, we're still grieving people.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mark. Again, how do we get the book, please? This hour went fast, Mark. Wow, right?
It did.
Yeah.
William, how do we get your book? All right, I'll tell you. It's at Heaven's Door. It's on sale worldwide at all fine bookstores and at Amazon.com. How's that?
Beautiful, Mark.
I want to congratulate you for the way you did this book, for the way you wrote this book, because people, just take this from me. When you read the book, you will become part of the story. That's how well written this is.
Yeah.
You have opened a heart on what could be so diagnostic. And you are telling these stories from a perspective of absolute divine heart opening love. And that is a breakthrough in itself for a book like this.
Thank you, Pat. That was my intention, was to tell these stories from the experiencer's point of view in the midst of a great loss that somehow was transformed through the shared death experience to be imbued with great meaning and purpose.
Well, I hope your next book is really to address the pain of people that have been that transition during COVID. I know that's going to be your next book. Mark, thank you, Mark, as usual. Thank you, William. I hope you will come back. I want to thank all of you for tuning us in, turning us on. Jacob, again, thank you. All of you out there, please read this book. Your heart will open. See you
and
next
we
time.
Will be, yeah, and Dr. Pat and I will be back next week, and it's a call-in show, and it's not just a call-in show, it's a St. Patrick's Day call-in show.
That's my name.
And there we go. It's also Women's History Month, and let's all give a shout-out to our very own Dr. Pat. Thank you for making a difference in this world. Thank you, everyone.
You.
God bless. Namaste. And to the people of Ukraine, you're in our thoughts and prayers.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning into The Psychic in the Doc with Mark Anthony and me, Dr. Pat Basile, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Hey, look, come back next week so we can explore with you more of life's many challenges and learn from fascinating guests. And you know what? Even Mark and me. We'll connect you and discover insights from people in this life and from the afterlife. Extraordinary problems? Yeah, they do. They require extraordinary solutions. But step into the world of possibilities with us on The Psychic and the Doc. That's every Thursday, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That's TransformationTalkRadio.com. And don't forget, we're also live face-to-face on Facebook.com, Transformation Talk Radio.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.